We are finishing up our series on Hosea today, and we're going to be in Hosea chapter 3. So we're going to recap a little bit. The prophet Hosea has been sent to marry a prostitute for the purpose of showing symbolism of Israel and the way they have kind of cheated on God with other gods and their sin. Hosea has married this woman. Her name is Gomer. They have had children together. Now she has left him and gone back into her previous lifestyle. And so that's where we stopped last week. And so we're picking up today in chapter 3 of Hosea. And we're going to start in verse 1. And I want you to pay attention to this. And I want you to try to put yourself in this position. Okay? You have already, God has already made you marry someone that probably was not someone you would want to be married to. But you have done it because God told you to. And then it ended the way you probably thought it would end. And now this is what God says. It says, "Then the Lord said to me, go again and love a woman who is loved by her husband, yet an adulteress, even as the Lord loves the sons of Israel." Okay. So it doesn't take a lot of reading between the lines. So here's what happens. God tells Hosea, all right, I want you to go off and find the wife that left you and bring her home. Now, I want you to think for a moment on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 being that you never forgive anybody and you are a classic lifetime grudge holder. To 10. 10 being that you'll forgive anybody for anything, anytime. On a scale of 1 to 10, I want you to take a minute and I want you to think where you are on that scale. How forgiving are you on that scale of 1 to 10? 10 being super, super forgiving, like almost Jesus-level forgiving. 1 being never. How many of you would say you're a 5? Gwen, why was that funny? Ethel said, I'm a five. Okay, who's a 5? Well, I start in the middle, Gwen. I start in the middle. I wasn't going to ask who's a 2. That's like saying who wants to go to hell. I mean, just why would I say that? Who thinks they're a 7? How many of you just aren't going to participate? Okay. All right. Okay. That's better. Now, I'm going to demonstrate something. I'm not going to hold that against you. There you go. There's the forgiveness in action. I'm not going to hold that against you. Let me ask you this. How many of you, generally speaking, wait for someone to ask for forgiveness before you give it? Okay. Now, I want you to understand what God is telling Hosea to do, okay? Because this is really important, and I don't think this should be lost on us because this is pretty significant to the story. God doesn't say to Hosea, "Hosea, Gomer is going to feel terrible about what she's done. She is going to come home and repent and beg for your forgiveness." Now, if that was the story, that would be impressive, right? Because she left him, went back into a life of prostitution. Now, I want to be clear because nuance matters in a story like this, and I think it will to a lot of you. She didn't leave Hosea for another guy. She left Hosea so she could be with a lot of guys. Okay? I know some of you are going, "Stuart, please stop." But that's important to the story. I mean, that's critically important to the story because what this whole story is about is God trying to explain to the children of Israel and to us the scope of his love and his forgiveness. So this is not a story about Gomer leaving Hosea for another man and then after a few months. This isn't like the prodigal son where she comes home and she's sorry and she falls on her face and says, "Please take me back." That's not what happened. If that was the story, and he did it, that'd be pretty impressive. But that's not what this story's about. She leaves him, goes back into a life of prostitution, and apparently she's perfectly content to be in that life. And God says, I want you to go track her down, and I want you to bring her home. I want you to track her down, I want you to bring her home, and I want you to love her the way I love Israel. Now, I don't care where you put yourself on that scale this morning. Everyone in this room would be like, if God told me to do this, I would have to, me and him would have to have a conversation. Now, what story in the New Testament does this kind of remind you of? Can anybody think of one? I'll give you a hint. It involves Peter. Remember when Peter comes to Jesus, he said, Lord, how many times should I forgive somebody? Seven? Seven seems like a good number. It's a holy number. It is the number of completeness in Scripture. Peter says, seven times? That would be pretty good. And what does Jesus tell him? I tell you 70 times seven. And Peter probably is like, now Peter's a fisherman, so I don't know how well he did math, but I'm sure Peter was like, that sounds like a lot. That sounds like a lot. That in and of itself would stretch most of our abilities to forgive. It would stretch our abilities to do that. And so in this particular story, God goes to Hosea and he says, look, this woman who has abandoned you. And by the way, I want to be exceptionally clear, because I think this is super important, because this does matter. She didn't just leave Hosea. She left the kids. She didn't just abandon her husband. She abandoned her entire family. She left all of it behind to go back into a life which was really, really bad. And God goes to Hosea and says, I want you to go find her. Okay? I want you to go find her. I want you to bring her home. Now, I want to ask you a question this morning. Why do you need someone to ask you for forgiveness before you give it? What? Well, it's an interesting thing, right? Because this is one of the mistakes that we make about forgiveness. We think forgiveness is about the other person. And forgiveness isn't about the other person. Who's forgiveness about? It's about you. Now, I'm going to tell you how I learned that. There was a person once that I hated. And when I say I hated him, I hated him. Now, I want to be very clear. I'm not a murderer, so I wasn't going to kill him. But if I'd seen somebody else killing him, I might not have stopped him. I mean, I really disliked this person. Really, really hated this person. And someone who was a good friend of mine sat down with me one day and said, Stuart, you need to get over this. You need to forgive this person for what they did. You need to forgive them. And I said, I have no intention of forgiving them. And they said, why? And I said, they don't deserve it. And the person looked at me and said, you need to read the scripture better. The forgiveness isn't about them. It's about you. Do you realize that some of the people this morning you hate couldn't care less if you hate them? Do you know that? They couldn't care less. If you hate them, they probably feel the same way about you. And if you hate them for the rest of their life, you know how much they're going to care? Not at all. It'll bother them at all. So here's the irony of that. When you hate someone, when you refuse to forgive someone, who are you actually hurting? You're not hurting them. You're not hurting them. You're hurting yourself. You get tied up with anger and frustration and bitterness. And let me tell you something. Anger will eat a hole in your soul. It will eat you from the inside out. And some of you know that from experience. It will absolutely destroy you. And so the idea here is that forgiveness is incredibly important, not in that, and this is our problem, we think, well, if I forgive that person, I'm letting them off the hook. Now, let me ask you a question. Who's the judge? God is the judge, right? So if you forgive somebody, how are you letting them off the hook with him if you're forgiving them? What hook do you have them on? And that's how we think. It's like, well, I don't want to let that person off the hook. I don't want to let them think they got away with it. You're not the judge anyway. They're not getting away with anything. But the forgiveness is beneficial to you. And so in this story, he says, Hosea, look, I want you to go find this woman. I want you to bring her home. And most of us, when we hear this story, the first thing we say is, I wouldn't do that. There's no way I would do that. I could never forgive that woman for what she did to me. And God says, Hosea, you need to model my forgiveness. Now, do any of you remember this really important line in the Lord's Prayer where it says, forgive us our debts or trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us? How many of you think that that's a throwaway line that has no significance? Anybody believe that? No. I don't think any of us believe that. But here's the problem. We act like we don't believe it. So, I want to ask you a question this morning before we move to the next part of this passage. If your salvation today was dependent on how you forgive other people, if God really forgives you the way you forgive others, if you died today, would you go to heaven? Because you might. And it could. Because the scripture says it does. It says that we are forgiven the way we forgive others. Jesus asked for that. And it's why he told Peter. It's why he said, you need to forgive 70 times 7, Peter. You've got to learn to let these things go. And if you've seen The Chosen, they do a really good job of showing some conflict between Peter and Matthew because of the taxes and stuff. But the reality is, whether that was the narrative or not, we all understand Peter's perspective. It's like, I'll forgive somebody a few times, but I'm not going to continue to do it. But the scripture tells us our ability to forgive is tied directly to how we're forgiven. So God says to Hosea, I want you to go, I want you to find her, and I want you to bring her back. He says, we're going to do this to demonstrate the way the Lord loves the sons of Israel. Though they turn to other gods and love raisin cakes. So if you love raisin cakes, I think that's a translational error. I think that's really rice cakes. I don't know if you've ever had a rice cake. They're nasty. By the way, if you're wondering what a random thing to say, that they love raisin cakes, that actually has to do with some of the temples they worshiped in. That's kind of an obscure Old Testament reference. But I don't want you to sit here the rest of the morning and go, raisin cakes? Really? I've got raisin cakes at the house. Am I going to hell? What is that about? This is just about the temple. This is why I don't eat raisins. But it has nothing to do. It's just an Old Testament reference to some of the things they did in some of the temples of Baal. It doesn't mean that raisin cakes will send you to hell. It just felt like I needed to say that for some reason. Okay. So here's what Hosea does now. Okay. Hosea says, so I bought her for myself. For 15 shekels of silver and a homer and a half of barley. Now, a homer, that's not a reference to The Simpsons. A homer is a unit of measurement in the Old Testament. And according to the commentaries, a homer and a half of barley was about 15 shekels worth of barley. So what's happening here is Hosea says, I have to go, and I bought her back for 30 shekels. About 30 shekels of silver is what he pays. Now, here's the interesting thing. According to the commentaries, 30 shekels was the standard price you'd pay for what? A slave. Did you say a knight? You know, people ask me sometimes, Stuart, why do you ask questions to the congregation? Most preachers don't do that. Why do you ask questions? That's why. Because you get those great answers. Gwen, that's the best answer ever. You just made my Sunday. Totally wrong, but man, best answer ever. 30 shekels a night. That's so fantastic. 30 shekels is what you would pay if you were going to buy a slave. Now, I want to remind you, and if you go back to chapter 1, Hosea has already purchased her. Remember? He went out, he paid the dowry, and he purchased her. And this, again, this is standard Old Testament stuff. You'd pay a dowry to when you got married. And so he's already purchased her once, and now he's having to go out and purchase her again. Now, let me ask you a question. Who created you? God created you, right? In his image. Which means, whether you acknowledge it or not, and that's kind of an important part of this, it doesn't matter if you acknowledge it or not, who do you belong to? You already belong to God, right? So let me ask you a question. If you already belong to God, why did he have to give up his son to buy you back? If you already belong to him, why did he have to sacrifice his son to purchase you back? What? Because of sin. Okay? So I want you to understand the imagery here. This is super important. Hosea has already purchased Gomer once. She was already his property. He could have gone to the place where she was, and probably what had happened, because no one had bought Gomer from him. He could have walked in and said, "This is my wife. Here's the paperwork. I own her. Give her back." It's not what he does. He walks in and he says, "I want my wife back. What's the price?" They're like, 30 shekels, man. 15 shekels and some barley. 15 shekels worth of barley. It's incredibly important for us to understand this imagery, because God is saying, look, I made you. I created you in my image. You already belong to me. I made you. You're mine. But because of sin, because you have chosen to deviate from me, I'm going to go out and I'm going to repurchase you. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to sacrifice my physical son so that I can buy you back. And so this imagery here of God telling Hosea, look, I want you to go and I want you to find her. Now, here's the funny thing about this story. Is there any evidence she wants to come back? No. So why would Hosea go and buy her back if she's not requesting to come back? If she's not repented and said, Hosea, I want to come home, but these people own me now. Is there anything you can do? That's not what happens. He walks in. There's no evidence that she wants to go with him. And here's where this passage comes in. And I love sometimes when we can connect passages that we're like, oh my gosh, I never made that connection before. You remember when Paul says, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He died for us when you didn't want him. Now, let me ask you a question. Any of you remember a time in your life when you had no interest in God? A lot of you in here probably do. You remember times like, yeah, I didn't. Some of you, maybe it's because you didn't know better. You'd never grown up in church. You didn't know anything about God. Maybe some of you had gone to church as a kid, but had kind of gotten away from it in your adolescent years, your high school years, college, maybe young adult, you'd gotten away from it. But a lot of us in this room can probably remember a time when we had no interest in God or His forgiveness, and yet He had already made the sacrifice to buy you, even though you didn't care. And that's Hosea and Gomer. I try to picture this story in my mind. I try to picture Hosea walking into a temple of Baal. And there's Gomer, temple prostitute. That's kind of how I picture it. And he walks in and she's like, oh no, he found me. And he walks in and is like, all right, get your stuff. We're going home. All right, how much to buy her back? How enthusiastic would you be about purchasing your wife back if you knew she didn't want to go home with you? Now, some of you can just think to something maybe in the last few days where you've been in an argument at the house. That ever happened to any of you? Any of you ever getting? I love the fact the whole room around is going, no, never. Never once, Stuart. We'd never argue. Passive-aggressive people. When there's an argument, when there's some, you know, and maybe you're saying, well, we don't argue, we just don't talk. Some of you may do that. It's like, we don't argue, it's just we don't talk when we're mad at each other. Some of you may. And so you understand this idea that there are times when you're agitated with your spouse, that the idea of doing something nice for them, like, I ain't doing nothing nice for them right now. That ain't what they just did to me. He did this, or she did that, or she said this. He forgot to do that. I ain't doing nothing nice for them. So you can imagine, everyone in here can understand this imagery of here's this woman who has left you, left her children, gone back into this life, and now you've been sent to get her. And again, there's nothing in this story to suggest that this is something like the Princess Bride, where he walks in and she runs and jumps in his arms like, you found me. There is nothing to suggest that's the way this story goes. We would love it to be like that. That would be romantic and sweet the week after Valentine's. After last week, somebody told me, you're right, Stuart, worst Valentine's sermon ever. Yeah. He goes and finds her, and he buys her back, even though there's no evidence that she wants to be bought back. Now, why is this imagery important? Why is this the way the story goes? How many people in the world are completely disinterested in the sacrifice that Christ made for them? And let's just be honest. How many of you kind of came to Christ kicking and screaming? I remember when me and Stephanie got married, I looked at her, right, this was before we got married, I looked at her and said, I promise you, I will never be a minister. Stephanie, is that correct? Did I say that? She's in the sound room going, yes, yes you did, you liar. Now, why do you think I told her that? Because I had no intention of ever being a minister. My dad was a minister. I was doing youth ministry, but I was not going to be a senior minister. No interest in it at all. Got drug into this job, kicking and screaming by God. And every once in a while, if he's not paying attention, I'll still take a kick at him over this job. Every once in a while, I'll be like, yeah. Some of you came into your relationship with God like that, didn't you? You were, I don't know, I don't really want to do this because you had these images. Oh, if I do this, I'm never going to have fun again. Is that right, Tanisha? Tanisha's like, yeah. Tanisha's like, you can't be a Christian and have fun. And then she met me and she's like, that dude has a lot of fun. And then she found out I was a minister, and she goes, I'm never going to that church. And then she became friends with Carissa, and Chris said, you should come to our Easter service. Didn't you invite her to Easter service? Yeah, you did. Yeah, I know you knew her before. No, stop trying to tell. What are you, my wife, trying to tell my story for me? I've already got a wife, Tanisha, that tells my stories for me. By the way, speaking of somebody being mad at their spouse right now in the sound room, my wife she's there like, oh, I'm going to get him when we get home. You know, we sometimes that's what happened to us. We come into these relationships and we're not passionate about it. We're very pensive about it. We're not sure we even want it. And yet God has already paid the price for us. And so when Hosea comes in, I don't picture this as being some joyous reunion where she runs and jumps in his arms. There may be in her mind a sense of resignation. I got to go home and be a housewife. I got to go home and take care of those children. But he buys her anyway and pays a pretty significant price to get her. So it says, I bought her for myself for 15 shekels of silver and a homer and a half of barley. And I want you to listen to what he says to her in verse 3. Then I said to her, you shall stay with me for many days. You shall not play the harlot, nor shall you have a man, so I also will be towards you. Now, there's a couple of interpretations, and I don't want to get into what that last part of the verse means, because that's kind of a side thing. I don't really, not kind of part of the message this morning. But what I want you to notice is what he tells her. He says, you're going to come home with me. You're going to come home with me, and you're going to be there how long? You're going to be there a while. You're going to come back with me. You're going to stay with me, and you're going to stop doing these things which are self-destructive and harmful to you. And one of the more likely interpretations of that statement, so I will also be towards you, This is according, if you read this in the NIV, it certainly lends itself to this interpretation. This is Hosea saying, you're going to be reconciled. I'm going to be your husband and your only husband. I'm going to be the only man you're with. You are going to be faithful to me. You are going to be redeemed. And so we have this incredible story where God says, this is the imagery I want Israel to understand. I'm going to redeem Israel. I'm going to do it. Here's the fun thing, whether they want it or not. Whether they want it or not, I'm going to redeem them. I'm going to offer them redemption. And they're going to go through some things. There's going to be some times of trouble for Israel. They're going to be conquered and they're going to be drug off into exile. But as that happens, I'm still going to be their God. I'm still going to offer them redemption. Now, let me ask you a question. How many of you can think of a time when you were afraid that God had given up on you? And I would guess probably there's more of us in here that would like to admit that we were in a place in our life at some point where we thought, God has probably given up on me. I've done too many terrible things, and I can't be saved. I saw this clip. I don't just sometimes I had this bad habit of sitting down on Twitter and just scrolling, just seeing what just stuff that pops up. And you just can't make this stuff up. I'm scrolling through Twitter last night. Stephanie was down in Crestwood with Dad, and so I had stayed. I'd come back to the house. I wouldn't have to get up super early and come to Greenville this morning. So I'm sitting at the house. Caleb's upstairs. So I'm sitting there in my recliner getting ready to go to bed, and I'm scrolling through Twitter. And all of a sudden, I see this thing pop up. And it's just like, you can't make this stuff up. It was a video interview with Son of Sam. Any of you remember who Son of Sam was? He's a serial killer. And they were doing an interview with him, and he was talking about the process by which he accepted Christ while he was in prison. And he was talking about the fact that as a person who had killed multiple people, he was convinced that God could never love him. And he said it took a long time for him to understand that God could forgive all the terrible things he had done. I was like, wow. And I wasn't even thinking about the sermon when I was like, oh, Son of Sam. Oh, okay. I don't even think I knew that he had become a Christian in prison. I think a lot of us probably have been in a place in our life where we thought, that's it. God is done with me. I have tried his patience too many times. And yet we have this story in the Old Testament of Hosea and Gomer. And God says, look, I want to demonstrate so that everybody sees how I function, how I forgive, how I love. And that's incredibly challenging for us. Because all of us have probably been in a place where we did not feel like we deserved his grace, his mercy, his forgiveness, his redemption. And you know what? You're right. You probably didn't. But here's the good thing. You don't have to. Grace is a free gift that he gives us. And he extends it to all of us if we choose to accept it. And so, and by the way, we don't know what happened with Hosea and Gomer. The rest of the book is about prophecy. She's not really mentioned. We don't know. They lived happily ever after? Maybe. Maybe she was angry the rest of her life because she got drug home. We don't really know. But here's what we do know. The imagery of what God is trying to communicate is incredibly real and incredibly important for each and every person in this room today. However unfaithful you've been to God, however many times you've cheated on him, you have lied to him, you've turned from him, you've run from him, he still wants you back. And you may be like, I don't make any sense. Why would he want me back? Because you're his kid. He made you in his image. He loves you and he wants you back. And we see, again, we see images of this in the New Testament in some places. We see the prodigal son and the image of the son who comes back to the father. But here's the crazy thing. That story is about a son who comes back and begs for forgiveness. Gomer doesn't do that. God told Hosea, go find her. And you know what? God did that for some of you. In a time where you were not looking for him, you know what he was doing? He was looking for you. Some of you might even have been trying to hide from him. And you know what? I bet everybody in this room knows somebody that is just like that right now. They have run from God, they're hiding from God, but he has not given up on them. He is still looking for them. He wants nothing more than to bring them home. He's already paid the price. And so this morning, what I want to do is remind each and every one of you in this room, no matter what you've done, no matter how many times you've messed up, no matter how far you've fallen, God still loves you. He's still looking for you. He still wants you back. However damaged and broken you may be, he wants you back. And he's already paid the price to get you back. You just have to be willing to go.